I'm Frank Vaughn. It's April 10th, 2026, coming to you from the sunny tundra. Yes, it's sunny, of Saskatchewan. We just had another blizzard 2 days ago. Broke my tractor trying to get out. Had to fix that. Couldn't fix that. Had to come up with an alternative way of getting myself dug out. I'm convinced, for the metalheads that are in my audience, that all of the songs that have been written about blizzard beasts and winter demons have been written about Saskatchewan. A lot of people think it's Norway. Norway's Nerf ball. You got nothing. Anyway, let's get on with something that isn't so sunny. Now, it's no secret that the Canadian media have been in the bag for the Liberal Party, and in particular, their defense of Justin Trudeau. As he's disappeared from the public light, as he's gone on to date Kate Perry, and the fact that that's all the Canadian media want to talk about. Nobody wants to talk about his legacy. Nobody wants to talk about building statues to him. Nobody wants to talk about what he did and what shadow he leaves across the country. He's just disappeared. And this is a case in point. This is Jeff Brown. I just sued the Toronto Star for failing to publicly reveal information shared by the RCMP regarding Justin Trudeau and underage prawn. After much reflection, I finally decided to begin my litigation process related to events arising from the experiences I wrote about in Trudeau's kitchen. Have a look. Look it up. In Trudeau's kitchen. I'm not even talking about the more specific details, consequences I shared in Trudeau's kitchen, how the Star may have been negligent with respect to not telling my story. Those will be explored soon. I'm talking about the bigger picture consequences of media not sharing important details about political leadership with the citizenry. Oh, how we suffer in their absence. There is no fifth estate in Canada. It's all captured. The mainstream media is captured by the big red machine. It is funded by government. It's not just the CBC. It's just about everybody. Although there are some shining lights like the National Post that still give us a glimmer of hope. In this case, outside of the alternative media, in this case, I begin with something shared with me in 2021 by then Toronto Star journalist Robert Cribb. The fact that the RCMP had informed them that then Prime Minister JT was watching Kitty Prawn on his devices. It was their job to witness him in order to ensure his devices weren't compromised by a foreign power. When asked in 2022 if the story was going to go public, Cribb confirmed that the original source was credible and affirmed that the story was coming. Where there's smoke, there's fire. It never came, and I believe it should have. I have struggled with this and various other things shared with me by media for a long time. At the link below is the filing itself for anyone interested in following the story. It is for the court to decide, but it is my view that the Star, particularly in a situation where they are receiving funds from the government, had a fiduciary duty to bring this information to the Canadian public. Now, you, as a viewer of mine, can go and read about that more. We all know Justin Trudeau is dirty. I guess we don't know how dirty, but look at this. This is what a Google search. You can read the terms. Lawsuit, Toronto, Sun. I wrote Sun, not Star. Let's just actually fix that right now. Let's write Star. Let's make sure we are accurate. And see, Facebook, X, Facebook, Reddit, Substack, Instagram, Instagram, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. No mainstream media source has been pushed to the top because that's what Google would do. They would bury the social media posts if they had a source matching that description that they could put at the top. There are no mainstream sources because nobody in the mainstream media is interested in this lawsuit. Now, it's not because it's just another frivolous lawsuit. The mainstream media covers a lot of lawsuits that are initiated in this country. They pick and choose which ones they publish, and they pick and choose which ones they bury. Obviously, they're burying this one. The only defense against it is you, the viewer, people like me, content creators like me that can bring attention to this thing because we are the media now. Moving on to something I introduced weeks ago, which is the Alto High Speed Rail Project, which is in the process of stealing the property of hundreds, if not thousands, of people along its 1,000-kilometer stretch. Good news, I guess. Polyev calls for cancellation of multi-billion-dollar high-speed rail project. We're talking a solid $60 to $90 billion that will be spent on this project. Construction of the final phase of the 1,000-kilometer rail line linking Montreal and Ottawa is set to kick off in 29 or 2030. This will be a test case for what would be a massive infrastructure project intended to transform rail travel in Canada's most densely populated region. The seven stops mandated by the federal government of Toronto, Peterborough, Ottawa, Laval, Quebec, Montreal, Trois-Rivières, Quebec and Quebec City, the proposed network would host 72 trains a day running on dedicated electric tracks at speeds of up to 300 kilometers an hour, slashing travel time. Now, we already have data in on this. China massively overbuilt high-speed rail, says leading economic geographer. If you go through this article and, you know, take your time and read the whole thing, what you're going to find is that it's underused, it's overpriced, and it's actually held back transit development in China because they focused on this and they didn't focus on other things. It's inhibited their development. Polyev's taken the right position. The country is going broke. $90 billion isn't even, there's still billions to go when it comes to the deficit that we're running federally every single year. And that's just federally. We're not talking about provincially. We're not talking about the municipalities, how broke Canada is. We're not talking about consumer debt. We're just talking about one level of government. We need that $90 billion and we need it other places. We need pipelines. We need these, we need them yesterday. At any rate, it's good, I guess, that the Conservative Party have taken this position. The problem is, and I've been showing you 338. I want to introduce you to polywave.com. No, they haven't sponsored me. This is just, we follow each other on Twitter. This is an alternative to 338. Publishes its own projections, publishes polling data, has very in-depth analysis. I just want to give it a shout out because I often use this site. Although I haven't had much cause lately because everything seems, it's baked in right now. The Conservatives are collapsing in real time. The Carney government is now one seat away from its majority. There's three by-elections coming up. The Liberals are going to win two of them easily. They're going to get their majority. They're not going to have to go to a general election. Carney's rule and iron grip on this country will be secured, and we will have 3 years to find out exactly what that means for the Canadian citizen. Now, of course, they do a brilliant job because they control the media. They control a lot of the social media space. They've got their fingers in just about every means of communication. And they're going to tell you they're doing great things for the Canadian citizen. And we know on this channel that that's not the case. Nothing is good for the Canadian citizen. Nobody's talking about empowering you. They're talking about managing you. And what is the CBC telling us? As the Conservative Party falls apart, as their members are getting poached, it's so bad. It's just so bad. One of the reasons, maybe I don't focus on it so much, is because so much of our destiny is already solidified. We're heading in a direction. There's momentum and there's inertia. And like I've said, the only interesting thing that's going on right now is the separatist movement in Alberta and Saskatchewan, at least from my perspective. There's also the PQ, which is going to win an election in Quebec, and they've promised to trigger another referendum on Quebec independence. Of course, they have a great big bag of money and resources that they sit on underneath their feet as they take welfare from Canada, as much of it as they can. When they do finally decide to leave, and I believe they will, because if they stay, French culture will be drowned out, just like the rest of Canadian culture, in a wave of immigration from the developing world, which is already baked in. I had a friend of mine contact me the other day, and they made a comment about Indian mass migration on Facebook. And every Singh in the entire world descended upon him, and they openly said, "We're replacing you. We're going to destroy you. It's our country now. You whiteys are gone." They're openly racist on Facebook, and no one says anything. No one wants to talk about that. No one wants to talk about they are bragging about being part of the replacement drive. Only when people like me, and it's difficult, right? Because I have that little percentage of native blood that courses through my veins that entitles me to call myself a Métis. So when people find that out on the left, they get all screwed up because I'm one of the minorities, sort of. It's so weird, this hierarchy of minority status. None of it should matter. We should all just be Canadians. We should all just move on together because there's going to be no Canada left if we don't. But this open bragging about replacing the population, this open bragging about replacing Whitey, this open bragging about how they're going to control everything. And we're told it's a conspiracy theory, but you can see it every single day online. What is it? Is it fake? Is it all bot accounts? Am I making it up? Is it not happening? You see it. I see it. My friend, who is also Métis himself, we both realize there will be nothing left. And I think Quebec understands that too. There will be no French culture because it will be drowned. The Canadian government is actively killing the thing that built Canada. They're actively killing the cultural institutions that were the bedrock of this country, and they're doing it through mass immigration. It's not to be against immigration. It's not racist to say so. There's an overabundance of racism being imported into this country right now. And it's kind of crazy how inverted people have it. The country that built the institutions that invites people in is somehow being labeled the racist one while it is being targeted for destruction. It's absolutely crazy to me. Now, we have this headline on screen. Nurse says she looked at woman 3 to 5 seconds. Staff overwhelmed before sepsis death at Ontario Hospital. Canada has some of the most expensive healthcare in the world. One of the dumbest talking points I hear come out of the American left, as well as out of foreign press, is that Canada has a healthcare system that's the envy of the world. Our own politicians will tell us that. It's failing. It's leaving people in sickness and death, and it's now offering an increasing number of people made who cannot get the health care that they need. Instead of palliative care, it's, why don't you consider dying? That's the kind of system that we've built. More funding, which is what this article is all about. It's about funding. We're not talking about solving problems. We're going to talk about funding. We're going to talk about hiring more people. We're going to talk about paying more money. But the system that underlies all of those things is what is the problem. And anytime anybody brings up ways to solve that problem, they get labeled as somebody who wants to destroy universal medicine, wants to destroy the healthcare system, wants to privatize everything, as if the other countries who deliver healthcare better than us don't have private components in all of their universal systems. There are plenty of countries that offer universal healthcare and do so with private mechanisms, because private profit-taking mechanisms incentivize efficiency and competition brings prices down. You can have universal coverage and still have those private incentives. We're missing that in Canada. We have more in common with Cuba and North Korea than we do a Western nation. Just one of the many problems with this country. Another thing, the ostrich con. Arguments to save birds from call in BC were based on falsehoods. Evidence shows. Now, look at what they can do. Remember, they're not telling you about that lawsuit that I opened this video with. They're just going on about how they lied about the ostriches and lied about the medicine. And by the way, when you're trying to save your herd, I can understand why people throw everything at the wall. Maybe they made some false claims. Maybe they made some false statements. Maybe they exaggerated exactly what it was they were doing. But underneath all of this nonsense is the fact that a whole herd of perfectly healthy birds were destroyed because the CFIA had to make a point. Just like they had to make a point with Montana Jones and her sheep. They killed them all first, and then they confirmed that they didn't have disease. And they killed all these ostriches even though they were perfectly healthy. Because the government has decided that if there's any exposure at all in any herd to any kind of disease, the whole thing must die. And the compensation process, which, by the way, they destroy the livelihood of this farm, and they're still in negotiations. They haven't been paid. Montana Jones never got paid. They were going to pay her, but then as a punitive measure, because she disobeyed the lawful order, so-called law. Well, it was a lawful order. Unjust, wrong, but lawful. She disobeyed the lawful order, and so she rug-pulled herself out of compensation. So the only option these people leave you is you must surrender your animals. They must die in the most inhumane conditions. And even at that, we see in the pictures, if you believe that these animals were diseased, why weren't the CFIA officials, why weren't the police, why weren't the people overseeing the cull wearing proper protective gear? They didn't even take it seriously because it was about the bureaucracy enforcing its rules upon the people. Moving on, as discussed on this channel before, Canada has no control over its borders. We have no control over our immigration system. I have said that the Liberals are trying to get some form of control over it, but it isn't much. We've been overrun by triads, we've been overrun by cartels, and I have celebrated on this channel the Trump administration trying to bring attention to that. I've taken heat for that. Not as much heat as I've taken for criticizing the war in Iran, but I have sung the praises of the Trump administration for putting the focus back on Canada, back on our borders, back on the security threat along its northern border. U.S. Border Patrol apprehends 4 British citizens for entering USA illegally from Canada through a remote area in Maine. They're identified as, these are some British names, Mohammed Sultan Saleh, Ali Mohammed Ali Abdullah, Hamid Mohammed Nagi, Ibrahim Ayub Khan. Madness down here says, my guess is someone dropped them off in a remote area of Canada and they hiked over. I wish they described what type of footwear they had on. Interesting. It appears Canada just let these men in. We either let them in or they came here without our knowledge. Four British hikers caught on Golden Road after illegally entering U.S. from Canada, says court records. One of them captured the whole thing on a GoPro cam, narrating it as a celebration as the group set foot on American soil. I can confirm you are now on U.S. soil, Mohammed Sultan Sunday, narrated on video as the group crossed through thick forest just a few hundred yards from St. Zachary Port of Entry in northwestern Somerset County. According to the affidavit, the problem still exists. Now, I don't know how I'm going to fare if the United States manages to get itself extricated from this nonsense that's got itself involved in the Middle East. You know, that's the big thing that I think people lose sight of. I've been warning against a war in Iran and another war in the Middle East, and so was Donald Trump. For 10 years, he's been warning about this outcome. And then he walked right into it, and we're still in the middle of it now. We're going to talk about that a little bit. And the reason it's so bad is because it takes the focus off reparations and repair of what is wrong with North America, Canada being a big part of it, Mexico being another part of it, domestic policy in the United States being another part, Chinese influence, cartels, drugs, thousands of people dying, tens of thousands of people dying every single year from a drug problem that our leaders in Canada have been happy to allow to flourish here, hiding in plain sight one of the most massive illegal black market money laundering trades that's ever been contrived in human history. I don't say that to be hyperbolic. The Europeans, the Americans, as I showed in my previous video work, I've showed the sources, they all recognize the mass scale of the problem in Canada. One of the facts that I keep coming back to is that the majority of Australian methamphetamine comes from Canada. How did we get in a situation where that can be the case? How is one lab, one single lab that was busted in British Columbia, responsible for $500 million in drug production, and only one person's ever been charged? I should actually follow up on that, because the last time I checked, they were still arguing about bail conditions for the guy, making sure that they weren't violating his human rights as he worked to generate poison to kill thousands. One guy, caretaker, production, marketing, who else has been charged? Last time I checked, no one else has been charged in that bust. And that, my friends, is just one bust. Now, let's go to the Western Standard. I'm subscribed to the Western Standard, though I'm not signed in. We have all the different top stories. We're talking about the political agenda becomes the arbiter of truth. Former Conservative MP Gladue backs Carney's agenda at convention. Indigenous elder references Kamloops unproven residential school graves at Liberal convention. They want to make it illegal for you to even talk about that. But here's the two headlines I just want to focus on. Alberta launches China Advisory Committee to boost trade and investment and exports. We don't need more dependence on China. We need more trade relations on this continent. There's nothing wrong with trading with China, but trying to replace one dependency, and that's the dependency on the United States, with another dependency with a foreign totalitarian power overseas that already operates police stations on our soil, that already has infiltrated and influenced our duly elected members of parliament, and then they covered it up for 100 years, practically. It was 99 years. We still don't know the names of the 11 politicians that were caught being compromised. We have open Chinese agents crossing the floor. First, they're allowed into the Conservative Party. This is Ma. Allowed into the Conservative Party. Then he's in the Liberal Party, crossing the floor, no problem. We got candidates openly calling for the kidnapping of their political opponents and the handing over of those kidnapped opponents to the Chinese embassy for a cash reward. Why is Daniel Smith looking to China for the future? Another thing, Alberta goes all in on AI as Smith pushes back on job loss fears. The sovereignists in Alberta have an uphill battle ahead of them. And I hope they win. I hope they're able to convince enough of the Albertan public that there needs to be a new direction. Everybody should want a new government after 150 years of this Westminster nonsense. Everybody should want out from under the king. Everybody should want out from under Ottawa and the governor general, the king's representative. We should want to create something new. We should want to create something that empowers the people. The UCP government has definitely shown an interest in empowering the people, at least in a limited way, far more than any other province seems to want to empower their people. Recall legislation, direct referendums, and plebiscites. These are all positive developments. One of the beautiful things about the independence movement is that maybe we could create a country that modernizes citizen access to its political institutions, something that hasn't been discussed or done in Canada ever. Have we ever truly been an independent country? I'd like to see it, but I fear, and I think forward-thinking people understand, that you're going to not only be fighting the feds on this, you're not only going to be fighting increasingly irrelevant Pierre Poilievre, you're going to be fighting Danielle Smith as well. I think she's, as much as she in the past said good things about sovereignty, don't you get the impression that maybe something's happened? Don't you get the impression that if there's enough legs under the independence movement, that the premier herself might come out in opposition? You have to keep an eye on this stuff. China's not the future for anybody. And now we do have to talk about the war in Iran a little bit. I know that people cringe whenever I talk about this, at least some of you do, but the fact of the matter is I think you're cringing because the reality that I'm presenting is such, and that reality threatens my own view of the world. It threatens what hope that I had. It threatens the things that I've defended, as I talked about in this video. The focus on North America is getting fragmented in the Zagros Mountains. We got to listen to Donald Trump speak for a minute.
I just mentioned a name, but a woman who I saw the other night on television just ripped some poor idiot apart. Megyn Kelly is here, and she's doing... Come up. Come up here, Megyn. By the way, I'm having a great time up here. Are you having a good time? This guy... Is he the greatest interviewer? Candace Owens, I watched her and I saw her coming. I said, you know, I'm pretty good at star power. I look at, I say, that's a star.
I just want to finish by saying your reputation's amazing. I will not let you down. You will be very, very impressed.
Donald Trump, let me say this. My audience, I'd say 90% supports you. Okay. Right. And you definitely have shown your knowledge of geopolitical systems.
Now, in order to provide the proper context as to why I showed you that video, we have to go to Trump's True Social account. But I see that there are social posts that weren't made when I started filming that have been made now that I just want to go over for a few seconds. Palantir Technology is proven to have great warfighting capabilities and equipment. Just ask our enemies, an endorsement of Palantir. Palantir is not the friend of the American people. Palantir is not the friend of those who want to oppose globalism or total information awareness. Palantir is the enemy. World's most powerful reset, using that great reset terminology, maybe inverting it, maybe trying to troll his opponents in Europe and the Davos set, but it's kind of disturbing all the same. Trump upends China's lucrative sanctioned oil import scheme after Iran-Venezuela interventions. This is rose-tinted glasses stuff. More of the oil coming out of the Persian Gulf is being settled in yuan today than it was before the war began. I'm not sure. I keep seeing this talking point, which has been brought up by the intelligence industry. I mean, Promethean updates and some of these other channels, 2CTV, that it's all about breaking Lloyd's of London and their control of the Persian Gulf. I'm not really sure how swapping, if you accept that narrative, how swapping the control of Europe and Lloyd's on the insurance industry for oil being settled in yuan, I'm not sure how that is a net positive for the United States if the intention is to maintain U.S. hegemony. This is narration creation. This is supporting what I call a failed policy. I've been calling this way for the last 10 years. A war with Iran is a disaster for the United States. Iran now controls the Persian Gulf. Make no mistake about it. And there's nothing the United States can do about it. They've said they've mined the strait. Only tanker traffic that they wish to pass will pass. We're going to get to the fact that it isn't moving. Let's try to focus here for a second. There are reports that Iran is charging fees to tankers going through the strait. They better not be, and if they are, they better stop now. What are you going to do, Don? What are you going to do? You can't open the Persian Gulf. You can't do it. Iran is doing a very poor job. Dishonorable, some would say, of allowing oil to go through the Strait of Hormuz. That is not the agreement we have. You agreed to their 10 points. You agreed to it. You tweeted it. It's on your social media channel. Maybe you misunderstood what it was you were agreeing to, but the Iranian 10 points have been clear since they released them. I don't think there's a ceasefire here, folks. The Israelis and Hezbollah are still fighting in Lebanon. A condition of the ceasefire was that Lebanon would be included. It's not the Iranians or the Americans. The Americans say that it was never part of the deal. the Iranians say it always was. But most importantly, the United States handpicked a mediator in Pakistan. And that mediator said that a ceasefire in Lebanon was part of the deal before the negotiations have even begun. This thing's on the ropes. Meanwhile, bombs keep falling. Meanwhile, the strait is still closed. But what I want to talk about with the video, here's the social media post. I know why Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly, Candace Owens, and Alex Jones have been fighting me for years, especially by the fact that they think it is wonderful for Iran, the number one state sponsor of terror, to have a nuclear weapon, because they have one thing in common, low IQ. You just heard Trump, in his own words, celebrate them. They haven't been fighting him for years. Tucker Carlson, in particular, was the person that he selected to enter the Republican National Convention before the last election. Side by side, they sat beside each other. Not fighting him, endorsing him. Tucker Carlson, who was there when Trump was inaugurated the second time and failed to put his hand on the Bible. Tucker Carlson, one of his biggest allies, has not been fighting him for years. Neither has Megyn Kelly. For that matter, whether you like Candace Owens or not, her and Charlie Kirk made their bread and butter by helping him get elected in the past. It's insane, the inversion of reality, and that the cultists, there's a lot about Donald Trump that I've defended over the years about his policies, more the ideas, not the man. I'm not in the cult of personality because of things like this. Snip, snap, snip, snap. He flips his script on a dime. And this is the infighting, which now has somewhere in here, we may not get to it today, but somewhere in here is an article about how, covering how MAGA influencers are all salivating at arresting each other. What has happened to America First and MAGA and freedom and the defense of the Constitution and free speech when they're calling for each other's arrests? The base itself is in the midst of a civil war. The independents are fleeing, and it spells big trouble coming November. Don't shoot me the messenger. I'm just the one telling you about it. Inflation surges as effect of Iran war show in prices. So, I mean, it's bounced off what I would call resistance, or I should say support, not resistance. Bounced off support, and now it's moving up. The U.S. government is spending $88 billion a month in interest on national debt, equal to the spending on defense and education combined. It's insane. And these issues aren't getting better. They're getting worse. Trump wants a Federal Reserve that will print, print, print. He wants low interest rates, baby. Although that has disappeared from the conversation, probably because it's not realistic. If you print now, inflation goes through the roof and the poorest Americans would suffer. Consumer sentiment hits record low. Inflation fears rise amid Iran war. The university's headline index of consumer sentiment tumbled to 47.6, down 10.7% from March to its lowest on record. Current conditions and expectations indexes also saw double-digit monthly declines. Whether you like it or not, the American people seem to detect that there's trouble on the horizon and they're already feeling it in their pocketbooks. So while the president is talking about how great the American economy is and how this is only a momentary blip on the radar, everything will be fine soon. Oil prices are going to come down. By the way, that is not going to happen. And before I get to why I say that's not going to happen, I just want to look at this. This is Rasmussen. Mark Mitchell's been silenced for over a month now. He's tweeting about movies and nonsense when he should be doing polling work. And the problem is, he's an accurate pollster. And the lifeline of Rasmussen was threatened because of what his polls were showing. And so instead of compromising his values, he just decided to be silent. And that's what I think has happened. Only 16% say their personal finances have improved. That's less than one in five Americans who claim that their finances have improved since Trump took office. Don't shoot the messenger. I'm telling you about the headwinds coming into November. And this is why the ceasefire, which isn't really a ceasefire, the pursuit of peace isn't going to solve, even if it works, is not going to solve the disruption that's already baked in. I understand that the market prices, if we actually just quickly open up crude oil prices, it's going to show you some ridiculous price. Which is actually, I mean, still, look at how much price rise is baked into these numbers. But this isn't the actual price of a real barrel of physical oil today if you want to buy it. That's running around $141 a barrel. That's a whole other subject. That's not going to get any better. You can trade fake prices or you can buy real product. The world's interested in real product, and real product is much more expensive than the number that you see on the screen. Saudi Arabia says operational activities halted at several energy sites. Attack on energy facilities cause a reduced supply and slow recovery, a Saudi official tells the story. Not only have they been attacked, but many nations in the Gulf have voluntarily shuttered some of their oil production. It's going to take a while to ramp up. Some of their storage facilities have been destroyed. Tankers are stuck in the strait, can't get through, so they had to shutter their production. These are effects that are going to take months to unwind in the best case scenario. In the worst case scenario, they just get worse. Gulf energy industry will take years to recover from Iran war. It took just days for the Iran war to hobble oil fields, refineries, and gas plants across the Persian Gulf. But it could take years to restore their full potential as the conflict drags on, because the conflict is still ongoing. Here's a list of the energy infrastructure that has been damaged. It's a pretty lengthy list, and this isn't even exhaustive or complete. A satellite image shows smoke and fire at Saudi Aramco's ABQAQ facility. This is all bad news for the global economy. It's all bad news for this idea that we're going to have this quick bounce, this quick recovery. Eventually, the markets will stop being irrational and they will price it in. The prices will move up. Massive Dos Bocas fire adds refining risk. Mexico's flagship refinery stays below capacity. There's no reason to believe that this is a result of sabotage or war. There's no reason to dismiss it outright. But these are problems that are domestic. Was this some kind of terror operation? Would we know if it was a terrorist strike? Would we know if it was a military strike or a sabotage strike? It's hard to say, but it all feeds into the thesis that energy disruption is already baked in. And there was another article I wanted to show you, but it seems to be lost and we're running long already. So I'll just summarize it for you. The global fertilizer crisis that's already baked in. We're not feeling it today, but the world's going to feel it in 6 months, 7 months, when the harvest fails to come off, when yields are down because things didn't happen on time. And this is all if the war stops today. My fear, and this is what drives my coverage of this war, is that it undermines the premise of MAGA. It undermines the premise of America First, and it could very well destroy the Republican Party in November. And if that happens, the entire idea of what the Trump administration was supposed to accomplish in this 4 years is just off the table. They'll turn on each other. They'll be hauled before Congress. There will be impeachment. And maybe it won't be successful. It doesn't have to be. The drama itself will derail the agenda, a very important domestic agenda, one of the most important domestic agendas that the United States has had in two generations, at the very least, to get the United States under control, to tackle the drug problem, tackle the illegal immigration problem, tackle the voting problems, tackle Chinese influence, Fortress North America, all that really important stuff can be lost in Persia. And right now, as it sits, the Iranians are sitting in the best position. Contrary to what Trump says, there is no regime change. The regime is more hardline than ever. And the regime has more power projection in the region today than it had at the beginning of this conflict. They control, uncontested, the Persian Gulf. And there's no amount of rhetoric or words that can cover over that fact. More oil is being traded outside of the petrodollar system. And on the table are a lifting of all the sanctions that were put in place, not to punish the Iranian regime, but to protect the petrodollar, which is now under threat. Another thing I didn't show you is what the Gulf allied states are saying about the situation. They are pissed at how much damage they've taken. They're pissed that those security guarantees weren't worth anything. They're angry that the Iranians, if this ceasefire were to hold, if you can call it a ceasefire at all, if this peace was to last, if they gain control of the Persian Gulf, their entire empire becomes subject to Iranian approval, what empire it is. This is such a big loss of American power projection and prestige. And for those who say it was necessary to counter Lloyd's of London, it's a nice myth but it covers over the, like, it's a little piece of truth that's used to cover over the big truth, which is that this whole thing, this endeavor, was embarked upon at the behest of the Israelis. And they are in no way inclined to allow the Americans off the hook now that the Americans are on the hook. There was no need. If the United States and its desire was to counter Europe and to reorganize its empire around a North American-centric focus, they didn't have to do this war. They could have accomplished all of their objectives and maintained a lot of clout in the world that they've now lost permanently. This isn't a temporary change. They could have done it all without engaging this war. And there was a time where I thought Trump knew that, the end of the 12-day war. I thought he still understood that. Remember when he was boarding a helicopter and he made a very pointed quote about how Israel and Iran don't know what the fuck they're doing? Do you remember that? That's a quote. It's not me swearing. That's a quote from the president. That quote made me think he understood. Something changed. I don't know what it is. And now America is stuck in a quagmire, and I'm worried that that quagmire is going to sink. All the other good things that are going on with America First and MAGA. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one.